Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of Black Belt Wall Street Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, speaking to you from the DMV, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed, and greetings and assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Aleikum salam, Brother Aziz. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing well, my brother.
Okay, well, Brother Aziz, we're going to continue our conversation that we started last week, and that's the power of the black dollar and how important we think it is for you to buy land. Of course, that's our... Those in the audience, when we open up our mic, you don't necessarily have to bring talk about our topics unless you want to. You can bring up your own discussion as long as it's not a religious discussion. We discuss anything but religious discussions. But other than that, we'll be opening the mics, and especially those of you who are in business. We love to hear about your business and how we can... do business with you, how we can get in touch with you. So it's a good time for network marketing and identifying each other. And who knows, a business person may just find themselves a client by listening to tonight's show, Brother Aziz. So we're going to go ahead and get
some. Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick sponsor break. We'll give the audience hopefully a chance to come on. So be back in about a minute or two.
Natural Skincare by Karima with Shea Butter. We offer a great selection of 100% all-natural moisturizing creams for the face and body without preservatives. Also, check out our hair products. Order online and get them delivered to your home. Check out our new online shop at www.etsy.com. Search for Natural Skincare by KHB. For more information, visit us online at www.naturalskincarebykarima.com or email us at naturalskincarebykarima@gmail.com. Give us a call at 301-534-4475 or fax us at 240-318-3537. Try out our newest product, our peppermint foot rub, for a luxurious feeling your feet won't forget. Bynum & Associates Financial Planning and Insurance. Immediate annuities. Retirees roll over your 401ks, TSPs, and pension plans into an immediate annuity. It will pay you a monthly income for life guaranteed. Please contact me for a free income quote today. At Bynum & Associates, we'll professionally mind your business. Visit us online at www.BynumAssociatesInsurance.com or give us a call at 202-288-5660 or 301-234-9090.
Okay, again, and welcome back to tonight's show. We are the Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, and of course, that's what we want to bring back, is our way of life during the time of the Black Belt Business Association. And I would... I would say that ranged from about 1925 until 1965. So for about a period of more than 60 years, the African Americans' money circulated in their communities for a period of more than 40 months. It would continue to circulate doing businesses. Create businesses with each other, our communities at that time, we own our own banks. We own our own insurance companies and financial companies. We own our own real estate companies. All of the, anything a community, grocery stores and whatever, farms and all types of businesses was in many colleges was financed during the time of the powerful Black Dollar and the Black Belt Business Association that ranged all the way from Texas throughout the South on up to many parts of New York and all many parts of the Midwest from Chicago and beyond. Like I said, not only did the money circulate in our communities for more than 40 months, but that circulation of monies created many, many businesses in our communities. Of course, when the disaster that when the white folks actually tried to take off the head of the African Americans at that time's finance and the power of their finance by destroying the Greenwood Business District and doing a direct attack and killing many, many of our brothers and sisters so they could, thinking they would destroy our financial goals and our advancements. But at that time, our monies had circulated to the point where we didn't have to destroy the Greenwood or the Black Belt Business District in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That did not stop Black Belt Wall Street. Black Belt Wall Street, again, was had been created from the ideas of Booker T. Washington and his business associates, and of course, it was financed by the power of the Greenwood Business District, because of course, the oil that the Caucasians also took from us after that destruction, and thinking that they could cut off our financial flow, and destroyed by destroying that organization. But again, because of our circulation, monies were circulating in our communities now just about throughout the South, and like I said, many parts of the North and the Midwest. So during the times of segregation, our monies continued to circulate, and like I said, we own every type of business that you can think of. Some of the business you still can recognize and remember, North Carolina Mutual, that was one of the insurance, but there was many. And banks, we own, in other words, we were financially dependent. And that financial independence, after the destruction of the Greenwood Business District, famously known as Black Belt Wall, I'm saying as Black Wall Street, the Black Belt Business District was able to continue to strive. And that circulation of monies, and not only during the circulations of monies, just to show how powerful that circulation and how powerful the Black Belt Business District was, even after the destruction of the Greenwood Business District, the Black Belt Business District continued to grow, and was able to finance finance many, many black states from throughout the South, and like I said, through all the way up to places of Connecticut, New York, and as far west beyond Chicago. But that circulation continued and was able to create famous businesses such as the Marcus Garvey. All of that, he was financed by the Black Belt Business District. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad started the Black Muslim in the early 20s and 30s. He was also financed. The Honorable Malcolm X, the Nation of Islam, all financed. The Cotton Club and many, many other famously known businesses, but most of all, businesses throughout our entire South and wherever most Black communities were, the Black Belt Business District was operating. Those operations continued until 1965. In 1965, this passed a law saying that integration was our way of living, conning us out of the success that we was having in our own communities, because during the time of segregation, history shows that was our most prominent times financially at any time in our history. But it was after the segregation, those values just depleted, vanished, and today just don't exist anymore, because we took all of our monies from the Black communities and we went to the integration. And that integration now, where our monies circulated in our communities for a period of 40 months, now it has it today, even though you can account for trillions of dollars as far as our economical, and I can say spendings, because we was forced into being consumers. And today, our monies stay in our communities. When we do have it, it stay in our communities. Statistics are showing for about 4 hours before it goes into some sort of a Caucasian financial system. So the African-American communities, again, in 1965, we abandoned our own communities, and especially our professionals and middle class and those who could afford, like they said, we're moving on up. But, of course, we can see that moving on up was a total disaster for us. So today as we speak, and we're finding ourselves in a financial disaster. And that word disaster is also a part of what we're going to be talking about tonight. We're blessed to have Sister Aisha back with us, and she's going to, of course, continue to try to save us from the disasters. She's with FEMA. She's been dealing with disasters just about all her professional career. So we're blessed to have that sister to help us with the disasters, the natural disasters. But as a financial planner, licensed financial, who does financial planning and been doing it for over 40 years, my own company, Bynum's and Associates, along with my co-host, Abdul Aziz Shaheed, our goal is to speak about and try to show the picture of our financial disasters, and how, as the sister has taught me, how we can mitigate those disasters. And one of the ways mitigation that those disasters is realizing our topic tonight, the power of the black dollar and the ownership. We see it land. But at this point, owning just about anything that is valuable, especially your homes. So brothers and sisters, our communities that we left, that's where you can afford to go back, because though you still have your communities, but that is on a life support also. You could also be losing your communities. So with that said, I am going to turn it over to my co-host, and then we're going to open up our mics, and hopefully that time those of you who are listening, we're going to give you a chance. And like I said, even though our topic is the power of the black dollar and buying land, that doesn't necessarily have to be your discussion once I go to the open mics. Because your discussion, if you're a business owner, we would love to know about your business, how we can network with you, know your business, and get to see if we can do business together. So we welcome business folks to identify themselves and let our communities know who you are. So with that said, Brother Aziz, I am going to now give you your opening remarks, and then we'll just open our mics after that. Brother Aziz.
Yes, thank you, Brother Belial. What I'd like to start out is talking about, I know what our topic is tonight, and I'm going to kind of vary off that a little bit. Since you've covered so much about the power of the black dollar, as well as having valuable, as well as land, but other valuables in our possessions, I want to talk about some current events that happened, matter of fact, in my home state and as well as your wife's home state, Alabama. Alabama, top dog when it comes to racism, although all of them are the same, but Alabama incident that went out a few days ago on the river there in Montgomery, Alabama, the capital of Alabama. Some white folks, Europeans, were parking their boat at a dock area where it was not supposed to park there, and the attendant, which was a black man, asked them to move the boat further away from this area there that it shouldn't be. And as a result, they told him to go to hell and attack the black man because he was trying to do his job and start beating him up. And just as cowards do, four, five, six of them jumped on one man. Well, when I was a kid coming up in Alabama, down in Fairhope, Alabama, close to Mobile, white folks were able to dominate in many ways and kill black folks because they could get away with it. But times have changed, and the rest of America need to wake up to the fact times have changed tremendously. And the violent things that they used to do in the past on certain peoples, especially the African Americans, people are not tolerating it anymore. And blacks come into the help of that brother down in Montgomery, Alabama, a few days ago was excellent. It was a sign of what goes on today and what we still need to continue to do. When we see brothers and sisters not just physically getting beat up, but getting abused in other ways, legally, for sure, because we make up the majority of the population in the prison system. We got almost 2 million people in prison in America, and over a million of them are African Americans. So we see that there's discrepancies all the way around in the American way of life when it comes to the treatment of African Americans. But this incident in Alabama is a good example of what we continue to need to do and need to do with one another. And from what I've read in the news just recently, there's still a couple of the people on the loose. They haven't turned themselves in because they probably feel like, you know, they don't need an answer and stuff like that. That's the mentality. And coincidentally, Donald Trump had just previously left Alabama prior to this incident. So I'm sure he, while he was down there in Alabama, he gave these crackers some more false courage, some courage that they didn't have, that they thought when they would jump on people in a group of gangs, that's what Kyle would do, gang up on people, gang up on one person, six, seven, eight, nine guys. That's what the Klan did. They come 20, 30 of them to do one man in and his family. So this type of stuff, and I'm from Alabama, this type of stuff, it's got to cease and it's going to cease because we are not going to tolerate it anymore. And that's anywhere in the country, that kind of behavior. It's got to go. Got to. It can, with that type of unity, we need to bring that same type of unity back in the African-American businesses, black businesses, startup businesses, as well as existing businesses. As Brother Bilal had mentioned earlier, we are, you know, we're on life support systems in our community when it comes to businesses. A lot of our people are employed, and they spend their money in businesses that don't care about them, not concerned about them whatsoever. They come down in your neighborhoods, and they service you for whatever you need, but yet still they don't care about you. None of that money circulating back in the neighborhood. And moreover, none of the people from the neighborhood are employed in these businesses. And this is criminal. This is criminal in the sense, this is not how communities are run or neighborhoods are run. They're run, historically in America, most neighborhood businesses were owned by someone that was in the community, the neighborhood, as well as the area. People, all of the businesses around were by people that lived in the neighborhood, and people knew one another. So much so that if something hard time befall one of the individuals or a family in the community, they was able to get help, not only from their neighbors, but they were given the American system known as credit. They were given credit until they was able to do better than that. And that's part of having community businesses with people from the community that own the businesses, wherein there was a commitment on both sides of supporting one another, making sure that one another had the things they needed for, you know, to survive in life. One of the things we see also, too, is black folks own a lot of land, especially down south, and they're selling a lot of land because they just don't have the right guidance, the right people talking to them before they sell their land. They get small amounts of money for their land, and this land, in turn, is turned around, and the people that buy it from them increase the value threefold, fourfold. They buy it cheap from us because we get this money in our hands, and that money sure won't last as long as the land will last, not even close. The money leaves our hands in a matter of a few months. A lot of us waste that money. We don't put it back into other businesses or anything like that. We just sell our land and give the money away to someone else. So that's important, that if we do own land and we're having problems maintaining it, let people know in the community, let some of the black leadership in the community, a financial institution, if you know African-Americans own them, or financial advisors such as Brother Bilal Bynum and Bynum Associates. These are the kind of people that can advise you if your land is getting close to foreclosure, things like that, that you can get the help you need to keep that land, and perhaps it will be of a great value to you and your siblings, and your children later on in life, because land is valuable, very valuable. Whether you're in business or whatever, just owning that land is valuable, because in America right now, a lot of the portions of the Northeast part of America those cities have been there for hundreds of years, and they've not had the best upkeep on them over that period of time. The cities are decaying, deteriorating away. The infrastructure is getting really, really poor. The water systems, the sewer systems, as well as the other parts of the grid, the electrical, the highway system, the bridges. There's been records of the bridges around America. There are over 500 major bridges that connect cities in America that are under, they need gross repair done to them. One of the bridges I know from commuting to New York City for quite a while back in the late 90s, the Verrazano Bridge. The Verrazano Bridge is a big bridge going into New York City, and it's been got so bad that the pavement over the top of the bridge that you ride over, the blacktop, a lot of that has worn away, and right now you're actually driving across the steel girders that all that, the skeleton, the frame of it. And, that's really bad because you can look right down, you're 200 feet or so above the water in the city, and you're on a bridge. There's just two levels on the Verrazano Bridge, two levels, which you don't normally see on a lot of these eastern cities where there's two levels, traffic on the top and bottom going in different directions. That's because of the volume of people that live in the city. But the bridge, it needs gross repair. The Grogsneck Bridge from Jersey going over into Manhattan, the tunnel, the Harlem Tunnel, all of these things, they really need major repairs done to them. My point is that a lot of the people that live in these places in the Northeast, New York, Philly, Jersey, New Jersey, which is a very toxic state when it comes to chemicals, having this chemical being put into the land or earth or being spilled or being produced there. Well, a lot of these people are moving south to the Carolinas, north and south, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, Arkansas. They're moving to these places, as I mentioned earlier, where the value of the properties in the neighborhoods aren't that expensive right now, not that high, in our neighborhoods especially. And we can go down, you can go and buy that land and have it and bring back some value to a land that they thought was cheap when it really isn't, because that's the way the system works when they redline areas and that to try to just get the people out of there totally so that the speculators can come in and buy up, and you'll never be able to get back that property or in that neighborhood again. So it's very important that if we do own land and we're having problems maintaining it, or we want to do something with it, such as the black farmers in that, the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, is a place to come to, contact us. We have information that we can provide for you to help you achieve some of these some of these projects that you'd like to get done. So, we are on every Wednesday from 7 to 9 p.m., sometimes from 7 to 8 p.m., depending on the number of participants we have. And we are not only involved in providing information for projects and businesses here in America, networking in our communities, but we also have conversations and talks about doing business in Africa. We have people, we have Sajda Abdul Ali coming on. She's a very expert, has expertise, knowledge in doing business in Africa, as well as some of her associates. We have information providing that for those of you that are interested in doing business in the continent of Africa. But moreover, we have a number of business professionals that's on our network that come on and give you information in all aspects of doing business. And on the second half of our show, as our brother Bilal had mentioned earlier, we have an expert when it comes to disaster preparation concerning climate control and weather destruction. Aisha Abdul Ali provides information from us that is provided by FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Association, and this information is very needed for all Americans, but especially in the African-American community on disaster preparation, such as we all know what went down at Hurricane Katrina down in New Orleans and the disaster that happened there and how no preparation was made whatsoever for the people. And it turned out to be a horrible event, horrible. So this is the type of information that Sister Aisha Abdul Ali provides for us when it comes to disaster preparation, and it's very valuable information. So all in all, these are the things that New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association provide for our community, the African-American community, as well as for any Americans that want to participate in this program. But we are a program that's focused primarily on African-American business, supporting them, having them network with one another, as well as providing information that they need to perhaps get them on the path to be successful at whatever business they're trying to get involved in. So, Brother Bilal, that's my say for starters before we get into our main topics where we can more elucidate on those topics in particular.
Okay, so, Brother, we thank you for your comments, and I would like to say one many things. We thank you for the many things, but when you opened up and talked about that disaster down in Montgomery, Alabama, I also witnessed TV, and brother, I'm wishing that I could have jumped in and helped the guy.
Absolutely.
It was nothing laughable about it. It was I think it's a picture of the white supremacy that Donald Trump, I mean, remember we had an insurrection here, and folks died from that insurrection. We have 1,700 police officers who are on some sort of disability are suffering from PTSD from the violence and that is being continuously, and we know the brutality of our police officers. So, what you saw on that doc yesterday was just how bold the white supremacists are becoming. So, it's something that we as a community need to come together and share our concerns, and that's what I am going to open our mics up.
We can't hear you, Brother Bilal.
Okay.
Right.
Second. I think I just did. Now we can continue. Let me open up everybody but that one person. And if that one person would put themselves on mute until you're ready to speak. And if you're ready to speak, we ask you to join right in. Brothers and sisters, Sister Aisha, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Before I open the mics, I want you to make your comments. And, of course, you know, at 8 o'clock, we'll be turning it over to you. But nevertheless, I welcome your introduction.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz. This is an interesting day today. We are listening to the situation regarding the fires in Maui, Hawaii. And interesting enough, I spent many years on that island, living on that island. And I find it very devastating, and my family that was raised on that island, they too are very devastated to see pictures of these fires, fires that started as brush fires, and now they are really sweeping that island in particular. And if you saw anything on the news in reference to this, you saw how this plume of very dark smoke, carcinogenic smoke, was moving through the islands, and I would think it was moving eastward. But that is going to appear on the other island exchange chain. It's expected to show up probably tomorrow or the next day or a few days later. And so the people there are going to be absolutely devastated. Most of the dwellings on Maui, which is one of the islands within the in that Pacific chain, they are boarded houses. They are built out of planks, the majority of them. And so it's very easy for one house to start incinerate another house until you have communities totally destroyed by fire. We hope that will not happen, but it's highly likely that it could because of the way the island is situated and the construction there. So our prayers go out to the people in Hawaii and the ones in Maui in particular, as our prayers go out to people throughout the world who are suffering from the devastation of climate change. And we're getting more into that shortly. So please, we want everyone to tune in who have tuned in. So please participate in the discussion because your comments will help us be better. Sometimes on Wednesday night, the audience will make a comment to us or ask a question, and we might not know the answer to it. But we'll tell you next week, I will do my best, or we will do our best to have the answer to your question. And we do. We are research people. We are financial people, and we are data-driven people, as well as people who are involved in our community, the world community, and especially the lives of the African-American and other underserved people in this population. So ask your questions, and if we don't know the answers, we are certainly do our best to research those answers, that question, and get back with you. So, Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz, I look forward to the discussion this evening. Thank you.
Thanks so much, brothers and sisters. At this time, I am going to open up all of the mics, and so again, if we certainly hear you speak to. In other words, we can let's have a conversation. Again, our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Good evening, everyone. It has been a while, but I hope that everyone is doing well. This is Saja Ali. It's been a minute, but can everyone hear me? Is my voice?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I am glad to be back on. Had to take some time and get my son's schedule together and such. Young children, you know, as a parent, young children, they definitely dominate the scheduling in the life. But aside from that, I'm so glad to be back on the radio, listening to the voice and the wisdom and the knowledge of Brother Bilal, Brother Aziz, and Sister Aisha, Madame Aisha Abdul Ali. It's phenomenal to be in this company. Thank you, Brother Aziz, for mentioning me as far as bringing in the international piece, because that's definitely my platform.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to continue with that platform as far as business in Africa. And what I want to do is just to reiterate the sentiment that the three of you have so graciously put out there as regards to we as a people not only coming together with our finances or economic, but as a community, understanding our power. And I want to emphasize to those who are listening, even if this might not be of your scope right now in your life, but something that you can pass on to your children or your grandchildren, is that to understand that the legacy that we've built in this country is prominent, regardless of what the media has allowed for us or is wanting for us to think about ourselves. But it doesn't have to stay here. We can continue our legacy in other countries. We can continue our legacy as far as economic development, economic prominence, as far as taking all the knowledge and the skills that we have cultivated here and taking it back to the land of our ancestors. There are communities right now of African Americans who are saying, you know what? We're gonna move abroad. And they're moving abroad to various countries, Sierra Leone, Senegal, Eastern Africa, such as Kenya and Tanzania, moving to South Africa, moving to Morocco. They're moving to the continent to establish opportunities and businesses there that could continue with the legacy that we started here, that our ancestors started here, and that we have cultivated. And so it continues today. And I can tell you from personal experience, it is an open one. It is a prominent one. It is one that is going to take patience and work, but the outcome is going to be foundational. It's going to be wonderful. And I say this with assurance that if you look online, you will see that so many African presidents are doing what they can to bring in African Americans, whether that is giving them citizenship after their ancestry, their DNA ancestry has been affirmed. They're giving them citizenship once they've established businesses in their country. They're inviting those businesses to come in and to be prominent and dominant in their economy. They want black people, they want black Americans, African Americans to come back to the continent and do in the continent what we have been doing for generations in the United States. They've studied our history. They've studied our pathways of business. They've studied and researched and paid attention to how we've moved in this country against the backdrop of racism and segregation and inequality and lack of opportunity, and how we have thrived, not just survived, but thrived for centuries. They want that same fortitude back in Africa and say, not only will you have the space and opportunity to do it, but you'll be home and you'll be able to cultivate it in a way where you are not only embraced, but you are elevated. And that is a real energy, and that's a real sentiment that is being expressed. So as we continue to fortify this wonderful platform on Black Belt Wall Street, and we talk about what's needed in this country, understand, and I'm bringing the other perspective of it, does it have to just be this country? There are other opportunities. There's, and not just in Africa, and also countries of the diaspora. If you several countries in the Caribbean and in South America, where the diaspora was prominent, where we, our ancestors, our slaves were moved around. They also want black businesses as well, because again, they've seen our history and they've seen what we are able to do. So these conversations that we're having is to inspire that forethought of let me see what's over there. And even if you're not bringing business over there, the opportunity for investing in those businesses, investing in businesses that are either based in Africa or set up by Africans in Africa, but maybe the Africans have ties here or they have connections to the United States and building that bridge. But nonetheless, the opportunities of investment will be discussed on this platform. My business partner and I have been dealing directly with several black-owned businesses that are in the continent right now, in Nigeria, in Sierra Leone, in Senegal, and we are putting together portfolios to share for that purpose. So that's more to come. But as Madame Aisha said, if you have any questions, anything that you want to propose to me in regards to international business from that perspective, I'm definitely here. I'm definitely here. So thank you for that moment.
Brothers and sisters, our mics are open.
Thank you.
So if you have any questions in regards to international trade and dual citizenship and doing business with Africa, our mics are open. You can ask the sister any questions you would like to ask her. Our mics are open.
This is Brother Aziz. Greetings, Sister Saja. I have a question to ask you concerning in doing business in Africa and that, some of the African Americans have been concerned about the governments being stable and you being able to put an investment there and it not, you know, the war or something like that would cause your whole investment to crumble. So is there any concern as far as you're concerned about stability in those governments that of the countries that you named in doing business there?
That's a really good question, and I'm glad you proposed that question. For the governments that are open, such as Ghana, such as Sierra Leone, for an example, just to name a few, their governments have been stable for years. Their governments have been stable, and especially Ghana particularly, and Sierra Leone's stability has been sustainability has been consistent for definitely over 10 years. I think it's going on for 20 years. When we look at the African nations and the particular countries, we're often getting it from the Western view, the platforms, the TV shows, the news programs from the West, and they are intentionally wanting to present these African nations as being unstable. The ones that I would be bringing to the forefront for discussion, because of the research and the data and what we're bringing, we wouldn't dare bring a country that has instability as far as economics and political situation. We wouldn't present that. So I don't want to say that that doesn't exist on the continent, but we wouldn't present it to you. That just wouldn't be sensible, right? But the ones who have economic stability, who have – and growth, right, we are bringing those to the table. Now, they will – some of the countries such as Sierra Leone, it is a progressive country. They're not – on the economic level as the West, or even a country that is maybe one or two levels down from the West, but they're growing. So investment opportunities are really hot right now because you have institutions such as the International Islamic Bank, you have the World Bank, you have large global institutions who often fund projects and programs and infrastructure in developing countries ready with millions of dollars to invest in these countries because they understand the economic growth and potential. So for us as a people to do the same thing, we're following suit with a development program that is evident. And those are the ones that I would bring to the program, talking about those countries.
Fantastic.
But
fantastic.
I definitely want to emphasize again that do your own research on these countries if you were to hear something negative, because the negativity is intentional. It's intentional. I often make a joke. I don't know who the listeners are into or have children or have grandchildren or have anyone in their family who are into Marvel comics or such. Of course, like I said, I have little kids, so I'm into it and such. But there was a character who was a villain to the superheroes, and he just snapped his fingers, and half of the population in the comic world or in the world that they were living in, half the population disappeared, right? And I was thinking, I said, if that was a situation where someone snapped their fingers and every black American left America and was placed somewhere safely, like back on the continent. But not only were we physically moved out of the United States, but our inventions, our concepts, our systems that we created, from the political to the economic to the engineering, if all of that left as well and the white people were left with no knowledge of it, where would this country be? Where would this country be? They know that they know that the availability for this country to succeed, to continue to be where it is because we are here. And we've been here for centuries doing this. But if we were to be empowered enough to just leave and go back to where we originally came, and take that same knowledge and same those same skills, and now build up the motherland. Wow, that will be a force to reckon with, and that was demonstrated by that situation in Alabama, brother. Let me tell you, all over social media, that's all people are talking about. That situation in Alabama. You know, it's so interesting because you had that one brother who swam across the river to get to that brother to help him, you know? And it wasn't just black people beating up on the white people who were wrongfully beating up on that man who was doing his job. Then you had other black people to come in and say, you know what, we're going to continue and show you that we are not going to take this. And it was definitely a community, and you had everybody. You even had a guy out there with a chair. So now there's, you know, funny meme going on social media about, you know, lift every chair and swing, or, you know, if you instead of carrying around a weapon, carry around that chair, you know. But what that symbolized was if we had that empowerment of self and we were to utilize that empowerment of self, that we can do dynamic things. So, you know, this is why I emphasize when we understand our power, we understand that, yes, we have legacy here in this country because of what we've done, and it is owed to us, and we have a right to it. I do not disagree with that. That's 1,000% true. But it doesn't have to stay here. We can take that same ingenuity, same talent, same tools, same skills, and take it back to the motherland where it came from and build up from there and build an empowered community from there because they want us. They really do. I know that was a long version of an answer for your question, brother, but the conversation just excites me. So,
Sister Sasha, I had one more question to ask you, which is very important, and that is, what is your understanding on the food crisis in Africa, and what could we do perhaps to help help with that food crisis, help, you know, them get the food?
So you so interesting you're saying that, because that is definitely one of the areas of industry that my business partner is in. He's buying a rice mill in Sierra Leone, and he is not a farmer at all. Now, his family is, they are from the farmland of in North Carolina, and he attended North Carolina A&T State University, but he didn't major in farming or in agriculture. However, he understands the economic, he has an MBA from UNC, but he understands the economic value of farming and getting into the farming-based industry. What we're finding, as we work on this project together, what we're finding to be very interesting is that this is intentional. The community, there are a lot of farmland in Sierra Leone. I'm talking about Sierra Leone specifically. This is where the business is happening, right? The industry is purposefully not allowing for farmers to have their produce sold on an international level or exporting their goods. So when we talk about the farmers are also not allowed, or they're not given the resources that they need to farm. So what we're finding out is that it is an intentional system that's being set up, or that has been set up, for food scarcity to happen. When we, as Black American, African Americans, come into it, because this is what he's experiencing right now, because of his citizenship as an American, he has leverage on a business level with the World Bank, with the international banks, with all these other funders to say, hey, I'm buying this industry right here, and this is what I want to happen afterwards. And because of that, doors are flying open because of his citizenship as an American. That's how our power is. So from there, the plan is for him, once the mill is purchased, he is going to continue the business of having the local farmers come in and manufacture their rice. And from there, export it. But not, it doesn't even have to be exported over the waters. It can be exported to Senegal. It can be exported to other neighboring countries. Start that industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's being denied. The people are being denied that opportunity. And that's another reason why the government wants African Americans to come in, because they understand position as Westerners. We have the opportunity. We have the availability to move obstacles that have been purposely been put in place for them not to be successful. In addition to that, we have cultivated in this country the knowledge of farming. We have a high skill of it, a very, very high skill of it. They want that knowledge over there. They want that knowledge, but because of the lack of resources and such, farming is still there, but it's dying out because of the lack of resources. So by African Americans to come over and say, hey, we have these resources, we have this knowledge, we can help farm, we can help, you know, build up back the agriculture industry, it is very, very possible. Very, very possible. So possible is plausible. But the food scarcity issue in these countries is intentional, because they want the country to continue to purchase outside of their country. It doesn't make sense. So, and this is, and of course, me going on a tangent. This is how nonsensical this is. Sierra Leone was known during slavery. The reason why a particular enslaver went to Sierra Leone, because the particular tribes, the Mende tribes, specifically, were known to be master rice producers, rice farmers. They were known. That's why they were stolen and intentionally brought over to South Carolina and such. Long story short, you have the Gullah communities. You have the Gullah people, which are which my mother and I are direct descendants from. We're from there. So they're master producers. They know. So much so where they actually were able to teach other countries, surrounding countries in Africa, how to produce rice and how to farm and all of that. For centuries they were doing that. For them now to be in a situation where they don't have that availability, for them to be crippled to where the country is importing rice, how do you go from being a master rice producer for centuries to where you were stolen for your skill? Now you can't even produce that for your country. That's intentional.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with the business plan that my partner has for buying the mill, the intention is, oh, we're going to bring that back to the people. And the people are going to be involved. He's just being a catalyst to make it happen. Because under international affairs, having a Westerner involved looks good on the books. That's why I was saying for African Americans, we already are born into privilege on an international level where we can just come in with our citizenship and say, hey, this is what I'm bringing to the table, in addition to my skills and my knowledge and my investments, but understand that the American dollar is very powerful for right now, and that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue of scarcity, that's a setup. It's an intentional setup, and we have the power to change that. And we know that is the truth because we've done that in this country and laws have been put in place to intentionally prevent us from being profitable and being successful in farming, intentionally. And we know that as well.
That's a fact.
Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Can I come in?
Yeah.
Right ahead, please.
Yeah. My name is Usman Darami. And I'm originally... Yeah, I'm fine. I'm originally from Sierra Leone. And
yes, Brother Usman, how you doing? How you doing?
I'm fine. And you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. So,
greetings, Brother Usman.
How you doing? But as
oh,
is,
man,
what's
I'm
happening?
Doing better.
I need to talk to you. You know, we need to talk sometime very soon. Yeah.
Yes.
You see,
yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, the presentation the sister made on Sierra Leone is really in place. You know, I think I can say that I know both sides. I know America a little bit, and I know Sierra Leone a little bit.
Right.
And yes, and I have been really trying for me to build such a bridge for a very long time. And the atmosphere, the political will is there for us to be able to do anything.
Most
and
certainly.
Also, other people have been using some funds. I think Brother Byron and I discussed that yesterday. You see, if we can just put our case together, we can be able for us to access money to do what we want to do from other places as well. You see, all we need to do is to demonstrate that, yes, we have the know-how, we have the skill, and we can be forward to do it and stuff like that. Then we can be able for us to partner with the Sierra Leone government and get access to the money from, you know, as long as it is money, it can come from anywhere. All they want to know is that you said you can do this and you are able for all to do that. And the young guy who is the president right now, he is very, very, very interested in development. He loves
yes,
his country.
He yeah.
loves his country, sincerely. You know, so, and there are so many things. And but as this asks a relevant question about the security of whatever investment you have, you see, the good thing about that is that the United States, even though probably they may have certain things, but there are tools or instruments that are available for them to protect an American business to offer you some kind of insurance for you to be able to do business in that in those kind of challenging environment, you see. And really, it is something that I am very much interested in. And Brother Aziz and I think we have had a lengthy discussion on something like that. and I have given him a lot of ideas that we can work on. Some of them we can start here and really continue with them on the other side. So, and I just like for us to really begin to put these things into practice. You know, let us really move ahead and go ahead and do, put something together. You don't have to pay my way. I'll take it over there, and then we can be able for us to communicate and move forward. You see, so I don't know. I don't know what to say again, because like I have submitted some ideas and all that stuff. So, yeah. So I don't know. The thing is, you know, all we need to do is really for us to really put the plan on paper. Let the wheels hit the tar. You know. They are waiting for us. They are waiting for us. And then, So that's what I can say for now. Yeah.
Hello, Uzma and Sister Tasha. Bilal Bynum. And most of my comments or questions you guys have sort of hit on. But when we started talking about international banking, Because in order to do what we're proposing to do, whether it's in whichever African country we decide to say that this is where we're going to make a go at it, it's going to take a large amount of monies. And then Sister Sasha was talking about international banking and other banking items that they have in Africa. If they could be one of the large money sponsors, so be it. Or if we're talking about going for self as Americans, we're going to also need a large cash sponsor because you're going to be talking about a large amount of monies. Now, what Brother Uzma is suggesting, something that Black Belt Wall Street is already preparing, because there are large money sponsors out there, and I think Sister Ali, when she first came on, she was talking about the White House and the Biden administration. They're already, I know they're, and I don't know for facts, but I know of rumors that they're already doing business in many parts of Africa, and they are looking to invest for more ventures. I have already started the certification where Black Wall Street will become an African American certified business entity. Both Black Belt Wall Street and Black Wall Street, the profit organization and our nonprofit, is already put in for forms, and this is in the Washington D.C. metropolitan area, where there has been a large grants, millions of dollars is already in these grants for African American to become certified, so we can bring in ideas and business plans where not only in our own communities, but also in many parts of Africa. So we're going to need, so the idea of a dual citizenship and the idea as to what African Americans can do advance in both countries, in their own black communities, and over in Africa, is a wonderful opportunity. An opportunity that would be for the first time presenting itself. But at the same time, if you take a peoples who have been forced to be consumers, and once being forced to be consumers, we're over close to $2 or $3 trillion a year is being put out of their communities and into a segregated white community. This can reverse itself, and we can have these funds again going back into our communities, like they were circulating during the time of Black Belt Wall Street. So I look forward to the work that we all will have to do. I look forward to going to Africa and seeing for ourselves, to investigate for ourselves. I look forward to knowing that we have the reassurance as to where we can do business. And that reassurance means that if there's anything fraudulent going on in the business, there is a reassure that would make things whole. So so that's the reassurance that would definitely have to be put into place, because, of course, the credibility is always going to be there, but one of the ways you can prove credibility is by seeing that everything is being ethically put in order. So, the other thing is the imports that African Americans can already do as we speak. We have products that we can send to Africa, and those shipments could be done within overnight almost. But our problem is, how do we import from the United States to Sierra Leone or any other country that we have connections with? And what is those reassurances can be executed? How can we be again reassured that if anything should go wrong, that there's a reassure that will make things right? So again, that's some of my concerns, and I will let either of you, if you may, just talk about maybe some of those concerns.
Thank you for that. And I don't want to take up more of Madame Aisha's time, because I know you said 8 o'clock is when she starts hers. I would say that whenever I'm speaking on these issues, I will come with facts and data and information to be as best reliable and offer assurance to anyone who's interested in these ventures. particularly because my company is going to be involved or my network is going to be involved, and I'm not going to come to this platform with anything that's false or has not been verified. When it comes to investment, mm-hmm. there's always amount of risk, but how to minimize that risk, that information would definitely be presented as I speak more on opportunities such as that. So I hope that was helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me just mention and respond a little to the question that Brother Bilal asked about how can you feel secure about exporting, especially exporting, and importing also from the other side to this side, or exporting from this side to the other side. And one of the things that I especially have had experience with in that area is that we don't utilize, when I say we, I'm talking about we as African-American people and new to this international business, we don't utilize the resources in America that are available to us, actually. And we always use the standard measure of standby letter of credit or letters of credit. And we have institutions, Ex-Im Bank in Washington, D.C., where you all are, Brother Bilal. It's a great source of information. And that's where you learn to actually put your securities in place that you're going to get your product or you're going to be able to successfully send your product, and or someone is obligated to pay if you don't get it, and you are obligated to pay them if they don't get it. So those mechanisms are in place. We just have to learn the process of utilizing them. And I think, Sajda, you would agree with that. So I would say to anyone who is considering either exporting or importing, utilize the resources in the U.S. And we as a group of people, we are savvy enough to know when we are not getting the right information and know the questions to ask. And so, yes, those avenues are available to us. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, can I come in a little bit too?
Go right ahead.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Yes, like the sister is saying, it is true. Because if you go to any local bank and then you establish a business account with them, they can be able for them to prepare for you the procedures of how these things can be executed. And the transaction can be just between your bank and the seller's bank from outside. So they have international agreements that binds the person. The only thing, if you do it that way, definitely you are sure to get your money, or the person is supposed to, like sister said, there's a time limit. For example, if I say I'm going to sell you coffee from Sierra Leone, and then you give me the specification, and I give you the specification, and you confirm that, yes, it is in compliance. All that will go into the agreement. And I will send that to you. Based on that, then you can give me a firm offer. And from that point onwards, the transaction now is between your bank and my bank. All they're waiting for whatever I said I'm going to provide, if it get to the port where it is designated to go, automatically the money is released to you. That's one area. The other area also, like the brother was saying, that they want to go to Africa and or anywhere for them to go and see things for themselves. Those facilities are also available. That is why I think when I talked to you yesterday, I said, well, there is the Minority Business Administration office in Washington, D.C., which is run by brother. His name is Keith Moore. If you become a certified minority company, and then they can become your client, and they will make provisions through the U.S. Trade Office in whatever country you want to go to, they will facilitate that kind of travel for you to meet the right people and, you know, and to do all the transactions and stuff like that. There are grants like that. There are so many things, and if we can go on the website and check them out, you can see exactly the kind of services they offer. They will even they will offer you even the technical tools you need for you to be able to do that kind of international transaction. So those things are there, including insurance that will protect your investment because of currency fluctuations. Civil unrest and all that stuff. There are provisions for that kind of insurance as well. But like you said, if you can just Google and see what they do, what the services the Minority Business Administration offers, you can see everything in there. You know, so these can be covered easily.
But see, Brother Usman, that's just what talking about, is, and that's why we put in for the certification.
Yeah.
We took a small look at the organization here for certified African Black business owners, and yes, that's what I mean about. You was talking about business plan, and I am saying the same thing. All all of us need to come together and put together a very impressive business plan. So they can see the idea that we're talking about, because here in the United States, again, you're talking about federal monies, grants or what have you. But, yes, if you can put together a business plan as to where getting that Lloyd sponsor, yes, they could possibly be that Lloyd sponsor that we need in order to do what we want to do in Sierra Leone or any other parts of Africa, because we have a large cash sponsor. And, of course, if it's coming from the United States, those reassurances that we need, we know are going to be in place. But at the same time, if we're going through an international banking system outside of the United States, would this banking system, international banking or wherever banks we're dealing with in Africa, would they be able to put up the monies, the large amount of monies that we would need? Would they be willing to invest into the African American? I know they need us, and we also need them. But at the same time, a large amount of monies is also needed in African Americans. We don't have our own banking system. We have a whole lot of monies, but we're not in control of our financial institutions. So if we... is there a foreign country that says that the African American is worth $100 million to us, and we would be able to put up that type of monies and invest to the African Americans coming on board and the dual citizenships and business entities would create themselves. Would they be willing to invest in the African American the same way we're saying that we sort of need each other? So,
I can answer that question, and if you can check it out as well.
Yeah,
all 90% of the banks in Africa, they all have affiliates. They have affiliated banks. You know, if you check anyone, just pick anyone and see that they have, as they are affiliated with a bank in New York or in London.
Yes.
So that is easy for you to do. If you in the right way, so you don't have to worry about that because, for example, like the Seattle Commercial Bank has a relationship with. Go ahead.
Brother Usman, no, my thing, international banking.
Yes.
When it comes to international banking and the international monetary system, yes. If you are a part of that, you are a part of the more or less the Europeans and the Americans' money flow. But if you're not a part of that international banking system, then and somebody's considering you to be a third world country, you're not a part of the international banking system. So again, I know I got the reassurance of that banking system. But what happens when I get away from the international system, and like I said, I'm dealing with a country that is saying we have the money, we'll finance you, but we're not a part of your international banking system. Can we still operate with you as a country, even though you may not be a part of the international banking system? And that's what, so of course, if I can see where Sierra Leone or any other country is a part of the international banking, so no problem. But at the same time, I know many countries in Africa are not a part of that international banking system.
Yeah, they are. But you see, brother, just for a simple test, go to your bank and tell them that, okay, you want to do international transaction. You want to buy something, you want to sell something to Africa. They have somebody there that can walk you through and tell you exactly what it is. And if the person is able to identify any bank in Ghana, in Sierra Leone, in Guinea, and all, they'll tell you that this bank, 95% of the time, is affiliated with a bank in New York. Yes, I can assure you of that. Check it out yourself, because like now, all the information I'm giving you is online. It's available to you. You know, they will tell you exactly what the procedures are. The only time you get into trouble is if you're going to go and do transaction by word of mouth. If I say, okay, brother, send me $1 million sort of stuff and stuff that I'm going to send you this, and we do it that kind of way, definitely there is a risk for you to get into trouble. But if you go to your local bank where you are banking and say you want to buy whatever or you want to sell something, what do you need to do? They will tell you the procedure, and they will probably will tell you exactly that this bank in Guinea or this bank in Ghana, either they have a relationship with that bank, or there's a bank in New York that can be able for you to really, that can be able for, you know, to represent that bank here in New York. So that is something that is, information is available, like international trade procedures is there. They can tell you exactly the step and step you need to do. And then, but I think that, yeah.
Okay, right. I want to say this question.
Okay.
I think Brother Bilal, one of the things Brother Bilal is asking Brother Usman is, are there any banks in Africa that are willing to invest $100 million, $50 million in us and our ability to bring something there to them? Are they willing to invest that kind of money into us?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't want to lie to you because, I don't want to lie to you. But that is something that is, that is why the other, like the Chinese or the Americans, are going to say, well, now we're going to allocate like 55 or like the Biden administration just allocated $55 billion to make such transactions possible, because they know for a fact that most of the people, especially like, you know, minority businesses, they do not have the financial strength and they do not have the capacity for them to even conduct those type of things. So that's why they, that's why they set the money there for. So, and for you to be able, for you to access that money, they will walk you through the whole process, protect you, give you the kind of insurance that you are talking about, and all that stuff. But if it, for any African bank to tell you they're going to be able for them to invest $150 million into something, that's not possible. The, one of the way they can go about doing that is that, for example, like if you identify a mineral that a mining company is interested in, you can partner with that mining company, and that mining company can use that mine as a leverage, you know, as a leverage to guarantee you the funds you need for you to make that kind of investment. You know, for example, like if somebody were talking about Ghana, Ghana leverage about a certain portion of their aluminum or their bauxite sites to China, and China was able for them to really put up billions of dollars that Ghana used for other development purposes. And Sierra Leone has been in a very good position for that. They have discovered several minerals. And if there was a map or we are on, I could have really displayed the map to you to show you exactly what is available. We didn't even know that we have uranium. So all of these things are there. You know, like I have a proposal that I have in my hand right now where a former mining engineer was able to buy a lucrative site and developed it. Now it's looking for somebody to invest into that. And that one, let's say we have, we know a solid mining company or an African-American mining company that are very knowledgeable about stuff like that. Yes, those are the type of things that they can be able for them to leverage, for them to raise the money they need to be able for them to do the kind of projects that we are talking about. So there are many ways of going about those type of things. But yes, but there's guarantee. If you want to do it through your bank will make sure that you get what you deserve. The same way the other person's bank also will get what they need to do. And if you really want, if you don't have money, you want for you to really go do the due diligence and stuff like that. Yes, if you become a client of the Minority Business Administration Office in Washington, D.C., they can make provisions for them to link you up with the trade section of any U.S. embassy, you know, in any country, you know, depending on what your strength are, what your strength is, they can be able for them to give you grants for you to do that. Because the United States government knows that in the long run, if you invest in something like that, there will be returns in the long run. So they do that. So, yes, there's guarantee, and then your money is safe. You do it to your bank. Like I said, brother, when you go to your bank, your local bank, just tell them, just give them a scenario, and they will walk you through the process to tell you.
When you start talking about banks are not the one that issue reassurance. When it comes to issuing reassurance, insurance companies are the ones that reassure you. And if you don't have an insurance company that's saying that we will guarantee, we will insure your imports, your exports, or your investments, then you could come out losing everything if an insurance company is not giving you insurance and being your reassurer. Banks don't offer that.
That is completely true. That's true completely. But what I'm saying is that for the bank, for them to make the money available to you anywhere, it have to. That's one of the most famous international trade banker guarantor is the Lloyd of London. They will make sure that insurance is in place, because they're not going to give their money to anybody without the assurance that the money is insured. So all that, they will take care of that. There's a fee you can pay for that, but they will make sure, definitely it's not the bank that's going to give it to you, but the bank is going to make sure that the insurance fee is paid by either the exporter or the importer and stuff like that. So yes, they offer it, but the bank will make sure that all those I's and T's are crossed, and they will go to, maybe depending on what it, but they go to the Lloyd, of London. They are the ones that have guaranteed that. But to make sure that the bank gets their money, because they are going to give Brother Byron money for him to buy cocoa from Tanzania. So, and for them to do that, yes, they have to be insured. And they will make sure that all those things are covered. That's what I'm saying. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah. Thanks, my brother. Let me just say this. Mm. What you're talking about and what I am talking about is not hypothetical. We already tried to do business as to where we could ask if we could export certain items, and one of them is rice. Mm-hmm. And South Carolina was one of the distributors of the rice that we were trying to go through. The problems that we had was the insurance companies, and the insurance companies were saying the reason that they couldn't reassure, it wasn't one country that they were concerned about. In this case, I think it was Sierra Leone that we was trying to send the rice to. But the insurance companies would not insure or give us the okay, because they didn't know what would happen to the shipment from the time it left port in the United States and getting to Sierra Leone or getting to whatever country we were trying to do business with. So they're saying that piracy or something like that could happen anywhere in shipment. Your shipment could get lost anywhere, this or that. And because of the unknown of the credibility, they would not insure certain items that we were trying. But now, I agree with you, and this is what I mean. If we have a large sponsor, whether it be here in the United States or whether it be in Africa, that large sponsor is going to have its own reassure in some way because of the large amount of monies that is being put into. But I look at where we don't have that large sponsor. I don't know if we would have the reassure.
Okay. But the setback for exporting rice to Africa from the United States, we encountered it. It's not because of the payment, because what happens is that the rice shipment before COVID, the rice shipment from Vietnam, from India, from other places, the shipping cost was high, was lower. For United States rice to be competitive in Sierra Leone or to be competitive in Liberia, they used to have, the United States government used to give a special concessions on the to offset the shipping cost and so many other things. So that is why most of the time, but if like right now, there are some countries, they are still importing, because like the sister was saying here, when I was a boy, we never imported rice. And when they started importing rice...
Brother Usama, I cut you off for a minute?
Okay.
And Brother Bilal, we only have a couple of more minutes left.
I would like
to say something about climate change and the disasters we're facing. And maybe the conversation on trade, every trade contract is different, and there are going to be differences. And so I think that perhaps Sajda can bring back those answers to some of the questions that we had. But I would like very much to, and of course, Brother Usman, we certainly appreciate your comments. But just for these last few minutes, I would like to say something about the climate change situation, if you don't mind.
No problem. No problem. Yeah.
Okay. And we're, of course, this is going to be a conversation that we have to have often about international business and international trade. So I know that many of us are very aware of the situation, as I mentioned earlier, of the wildfires that's taking place in Hawaii. And we talked before about the consequences that disasters cause. One disaster causes other disasters. These are consequences. And if we look at this situation in Hawaii, we're talking about wildfires, and we said many months ago that wildfires cause droughts, causes floods and mudslides and even earthquakes. Think of a scenario. If you have a oven, which could be a wildfire, let's think of an oven as a wildfire that's emitting high heat. Put a loaf of bread in that oven. And when you put that loaf of bread in that oven, it's going to start baking. Think of that bread as the earth, the surface of the earth that is being baked in that oven that we're calling the wildfire. When that bread is baked, it dries out in the center and it get a crust on it. And the crust is the surface of the earth. The dryness inside of the bread is the layer under the surface. It dries out. Then we go down a little further, we have a crust under the part that has dried out, and that's the other surface under the earth. So we have fire on top, the wildfires, and they have done their devastation in the property, and your economics and your generational wealth is gone because your house probably gone. Now we have the surface of the earth that has a crust on it. That crust is still heated, and so it begins to crack. And as it begins to crack, then we're going to have movement in the earth's surface, and we're going to have a situation of drought because the earth is going to try to replenish itself by bringing the moisture up from underneath the surface. But underneath that surface, once again, we have dryness, and that dryness is going to lend itself to more drought. We're going to have food insecurities, increased disease,
water shortages, and extreme heat. Extreme heat comes from the forest fire. So after the drought, then we can have earthquakes. After the earthquakes, we can have tsunamis and other forms of food inequality and air quality diminishing. So every time you hear about a disaster in one part of the country, and we're talking about the U.S., of course, there are disasters in the world, but we are primarily talking about the U.S. Right now, but we know that we have history that says how disasters in Africa and in South America have impacted the U.S. But we're talking about the U.S. now. Every time we have a extreme weather condition in the U.S., that condition that you're looking at on television, think of all of the other consequences and ramifications as a result of that one situation. Now, as that smoke that you saw, that big plume of smoke, looked like it was headed west, that is diminishing the air quality. And the people who are already sick with respiratory issues and with all type of issues that's being created from the environment, their situation is going to get worse. So we're looking at increased illnesses. That causes a drain on our healthcare system. We're also talking about increased food security shortages and ocean acidification. And that causes more marine death in the animals in the ocean. So always think about what are going to be the consequences long range in one disaster. And these wildfires in Hawaii, we're going to feel those consequences for a year or more to come. So this is where we are headed. And this is the kind of life that we have to prepare ourselves for. And the only way we can prepare ourselves, folks, is for us to educate ourselves and take the necessary steps of preparedness. And this is what we are not doing in the United States. And I have to conclude this statement by saying, remember, FEMA stated in 2022 that preparedness has increased in America since 2013 by 2%. And I put that 2% in quotes and say only 2% because that's devastating. And the question is, why are we not getting it and preparing more? Our audience are not saying, I want my organization to be prepared. Would you come speak to our organization and train us and help us prepare our families? So when you hear an alert for a disaster, you can pick up your emergency bag and walk out the door. But you got to know where you're going, and you have to have a plan on how you're going to get there. These are the things that are necessary to know beforehand. We prepare by buying insurance for our cars and for our homes and for other things and for our death, our life insurance. We are prepared. Why can't we prepare for our life that we are living now to continue and for the life of our children and other family members to continue? So we have to get further into these kinds of conversations. And next week, we want the audience to chime in. Tell us why you are not prepared. Have you thought about it? You know it's coming. You hear about it, so you are aware. So it's not lack of awareness. There's another issue that we have got to get a hold of. And I believe that the issue is that we don't believe. we do not believe is going to hit us. We have a couple of minutes. Anyone want to comment on that?
Yes, ma'am. Sister Aisha, I want to comment. First of all, I want to excuse us because your disaster training is, I think, at this point, it's a point of saving one, saving our lives. We have a situation where we've had fires burning ever since the early part of the winter coming out of Canada. And these, the disaster, that disaster has been going on, I mean, almost more than a half of a year, and it's still affected, and it's still affecting almost the entire globe by now. In addition to that, we have fires going on in California, and that disaster is affecting. We have water temperatures down in the Gulf shores, and water temperatures down there. And this is the bay temperatures. The bay water temperatures as high as 95 in some days. The water temperature in the bay is over 100 degrees. We have our coral reefs are dying. The fish, many of them are dying. Certain fish are not even in the area anymore. So this is going on in the bay. And of course, we see where, with as peoples were sleeping in their beds Tuesday, a firestorm comes through Hawaii and destroys. We can't see just how huge it is yet, but we know that that is a disaster. My sister, so again, your information, we apologize, but I can guarantee you next week you will, because your information is much, much more important right now than some of the things we're talking about as far as business, because if we have the disasters that is indicating themselves, we may not have a reason to be in business, because look like these disasters could take us out by the thousands. And I think the only reason is not, for some reason, it's the will of Almighty God, subhanahu Allah. So I wanted to make that statement, but at the same time, I wanted to let you know we don't take your training for granted, and I hope none of you.
Well, I know you do not.
I'm also saying that this a survivor's kit, 3-day survivor's kit. Think of those folks right now in Hawaii. They don't have a survivor's kit, and and that happened within seconds.
Absolutely.
In seconds, I mean trees. They didn't have an escape, nowhere to run to, other than if they was close to the water. They jumped in the water, and many of them could have possibly drowned if they hadn't been picked up by boat. So these disasters, my thing is, how do we end these disasters? We know how we started them, but how do we end them? So that's my statement. And we, like I said, we still have a few moments. Others may have statements or questions they ask, but I certainly suggest that they listen to you, and we will, your time won't be disturbed from here on in. I can guarantee that.
Brother Bilal, I was going to say, as mentioned, Sister Aisha, that you said when something is happening in one part of the world, it's affecting the other. Hawaii's had the fires. They got some the same type of brush fires over in Greece that people evacuating Greek islands as well as parts of Greece. And these natural disasters and fires are affecting are taking place all around the world. And in the Washington metropolitan area, we're still getting smoke from Canada, and that's my favorite.
Yes, and
there goes your air quality, especially for people who are impacted by upper respiratory illnesses. And upper respiratory illnesses is on an increase as a result, some of the signs are saying, is the result of COVID-19. We are still, the scientists and the doctors are still, the healthcare people are still trying to identify many of the ailments that people are having today that they can't account for. How does it relate to COVID-19? They don't have the answers. Doctors are telling patients, I do not know. Doctors are telling patients, you have symptoms of COVID, but I don't know what your problem is. But some of your symptoms are COVID-19 symptoms. So all of this is impacting our health. And we have got to become more conscious of it. But we have to learn how to believe in the fact that our climate that we're living in can kill us and wipe us out and our entire family. But we have not, we don't believe it yet. So hopefully we're going to get to that point. And we're going to keep talking about this topic. And we are moving forward, putting some things in place on a larger scale to get people and their organizations, your fraternities and your sororities and your faith-based institutions on the higher level to pull their people together to be trained in disaster preparedness and also make sure that they have the requisite tools, the supplies. We are putting all of this in place because we cannot leave it to the individual right now to initiate it. So we're going to the national organizations, and we'll let you know as we pursue this of our success with it because they have no other choice but to save their constituent base. And we're pointing out to them, these are the people you've got to save. Because if you don't save your people, you cannot stay in existence. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. And this is a serious issue. We're dealing with those, okay? So I look forward to talking more about it next week. I will have a better voice, hopefully. And we need to just make some commitments here. So I thank you. Are there any questions?
Yeah, Sister Aisha?
Yes.
Yes, I just want for you to know that I really, if there's any way that I can be, part of the solution, I can volunteer myself. And the reason I'm saying this is because I worked at Wayne County as air quality engineer for a long time. So I was involved in the U.S. EPA Title V development. So
okay.
If there's any way that you can see, can be good for you to utilize my little exposure to that, let me know. I can be for me to,
Well, thank you so much. And you stay on every week because we're going to be calling on you. Thank you for volunteering. And we look forward to talking about this next week.
Okay. Brother Aziz, I need to hear from you.
Tomorrow, brother, after noon, I'll give you a call, after 12 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that'll be a good time. I've just been so busy, 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 busy.
Yeah. But by the way, we're going to talk more.
I do halal certifications also, meat and poultry, as well as other products in the halal business.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So, Brother Byron, I'm going to call you. We're going to talk more about this. The little I know, because I have been involved into this export business for a little bit too. So we're going to talk more about it, okay?
Yes, yes, because, again, we're looking for large sponsors. We got to find them.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, until then, brothers and sisters. This is Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association. We thank you, Ben, and our audience, and we hope you will continue to join us.
Yeah.
And first of all, go on our website, New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association.com, and go to our membership. We need your membership. Thanks so much. Until next week, good evening.
Thank you.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you loved your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?